This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture. I'm Jasmine Shamsuddin with Uma Pagan. I'm PK Parkin for
Hello.
Bookmark.
Welcome Hello. Back, Chaz. It's been a while.
It has been. It's been too long. In fact, you know, when at the beginning of the summer, there was, I don't even know if they had the long list out for the Man Booker Prize.
No, they probably didn't.
Yeah.
I think you just missed it at the beginning of the summer holidays.
Yeah.
We're calling it summer holidays, are we?
Well, for fun.
Yes, you have children who go to school. So yes, it is summer holidays.
So last week, the short list was finalized. And
yes,
we've got, what, 6 books?
And yeah, it was after last Tuesday's show, which is why we didn't cover it last Tuesday. I think at about 5-6 p.m. our time, the shortlist was announced. And yes, the Booker Dozen, as they call it, it's actually 13 books, and then they shortlist it down to 6.
Right.
I have a love-hate relationship with the Booker Prize.
Really?
Yeah,
I hear this year it's not as exciting as previous years where there was a lot of sniping, infighting, politics.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That always makes for a much more fun Booker Prize. This year, excitement in the sense that, you know, there's all this hype in which they release, obviously, the Booker Committee, about how, you know, it's the most diverse list we've ever had. You know, women, men, all races, cultures, Africa, India, you know, all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah, okay, welcome to the world of literature. Yeah, just because you've been giving the prize to a whole bunch of white men for a long time doesn't mean it's, you know, doesn't mean other people haven't been doing it already. But anyway, so the list is interesting. So out of the list, out of the shortlist, I've read 5 of the 6 books on the shortlist. I haven't read the book by Jhumpa Lahiri because it's not out yet. Oh, well, it wasn't out. I think it was released in London on September the 8th.
Yeah.
It's only released in the US on September the 24th. So I haven't.
How does
time.
That work then? That
I don't
know. That
I
they
think
would get into the, you know, long or the shortlist.
I don't think it's not like the Oscars. So the Oscars, you know, when it comes to the Oscars, there's a cutoff date where they say all movies must have had a certain number of cinemas and done a certain number of festivals before this cutoff date, and then it qualifies to be for an Oscar submission. When it comes to the Booker Prize, I think publishers who feel, oh wow, we've got something that's Booker worthy, can actually submit that final draft, even though
the judges,
even though the print date, as long as the print date is this year, I think.
Right.
So even though the print date's coming out later.
Doesn't seem very fair, though.
I know, right?
Because, you know, we the readers can't really get in on the action to figure out whether, you know,
and thank you for bringing that up
and stuff.
Well, yes, exactly. Actually, there's a really fun story about how bookies were saying they don't actually read the books.
No,
because apparently it'll affect their judgment.
Oh my goodness!
Because if they like a book, and even though,
so what's their formula?
I have no idea. But thank you for bringing that up, because it just shows, and this is exactly how I felt, how removed from readers the prize is because of that, exactly because of what you said. As a reader, you aren't given an opportunity to judge the book. So essentially, the Booker Prize is by a committee to cater to authors who get a prize, and then, you know, that'll hopefully
reader.
Sell more books.
Yeah,
because it can be put with a big gold stamp on the front going Man Booker Prize winner, or for now, Man Booker Prize shortlisted.
Exactly.
And that's just it's annoying, right? Because I think it just removes the audience from the equation. That's one of my, you know, anyway. But I was excited, though, with the long list because of Tashaw.
Oh, yes.
So Tashaw was on the long list, a 5-star billionaire, which we reviewed on the show, which both of us liked, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I really liked that book, and I was so happy that Tash was nominated, but he didn't make the short list.
Oh.
I really liked that book. Oh, well, anyway. So we've got the list.
And it looks very international.
It is.
Well, Commonwealthy international.
Yeah, Commonwealthy international.
Not so Caucasian-y.
No. Actually, not so Caucasian-y at all, actually. You've got Zimbabwe, you've got New Zealand, you've got England, you've got India, you've got Canada. I think Ruth Ozeki, she's of Japanese descent, but I think she's might be living in Canada, if I'm not mistaken. And you've got Irish as well. So nice international potpourri, if you will.
Mm.
Yeah. So we have 6 books, and I think we'll start with, I want to say, No Violet Bulawayo. I think it's No Violet or No Violet. I don't know how you pronounce her name. And it's called We Need New Names, is the name of her book. Yes. No, I did not plan that joke. That just happened.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So No Violet Bulawayo. Now, so I read this book a while back, and it's... okay, so it's an adaptation of a short story written by her called Hitting Budapest, and it won the Kane Prize. And it's beautifully written, and she's a great stylist when it comes to prose. Mm-hmm. But I, for one, am kind of tired of reading these sorts of books. A story about Africa and a person who gets out of Africa and makes her way to Detroit, Michigan, or as the kids call it, Destroyed Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. Okay, I'll tell you why I'm fat tired of it. It's got all of those stereotypes. It's got, you know, there's political violence, there's AIDS, gotta have AIDS, there's incest, there's a 12-year-old girl who's pregnant after being raped by her grandfather, there's, there's street children, you know, and it's like every other African novel I read. And I know that it seems like an evolution of storytelling, and everyone has to go through that phase, right? Whether it's post-colonial, neo-colonial, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And I know everyone has those stories to tell, so they tell those stories. But I'm just kind of bored, lah.
Okay. that's all right.
Yeah, and I think if it wasn't for her writing, mm-hmm. I don't think I would have stuck through it.
Oh, all right.
Because her writing's good, and her writing is, I mean, it's beautifully harsh. Like, you know, when she talks about the color pink, she compares it to burn wounds. You know, so it's right. Like in your face, right? And then like when she describes guavas, she compares it to a man's angry fist. So it's like really brings these this kind of angry, tormented imagery, which you don't often see, right? I mean, it's very, it's beautiful plays on words and so on and so forth. So yeah, her writing is really, really cool. I mean, so her name, Violet Bulawayo, the name of her protagonist is called Darling. She makes it to the U.S. And then, of course, and the idea is that, you know, even after going to the U.S., she realizes that maybe all of that money and wealth doesn't actually amount to your dreams coming true either. Mm-hmm. So that's the general story. I mean, it's not a spoiler. I mean, material wealth, you know, doesn't necessarily make your dreams come true. So that's essentially the moral.
Right.
But it's a simple story, but, you know, it kind of goes into Mugabe's corruption and end of colonial rule and disenchantment at Mugabe, and, you know, the kind of, you know, there are witch doctors, and how people were let down by the disappointment of so-called democratic elections and all of these things. So it's a nice little encapsulated history of Zimbabwe, etc. And you know, what it means to move to the U.S. and being, you know, illegal, and the kind of immigrant lifestyle that comes with it. So it's not anything you haven't read before.
Right.
So I'm perplexed as to why it's on the list. It's beautifully written.
Okay.
But I just...
it's interesting.
It's
I'm
a very Booker book.
All right. And because Tash Oz's latest one wasn't a Booker book?
Oh, no, it is. It is. But what I mean is, you know how the Booker has a very similar style when they come to picking these books. And yeah, Tash Oz is very similar. Five-star billionaires, about five Malaysians who end up in China, and their different lives, right? I think it's from I can't remember. I think it's from a millionaire prostitute. There are a wide range of people who end up in China, and about how their lives, all in pursuit of the so-called riches that China has mm-hmm. to offer. So yeah, that immigrant story, the reverse immigration, if you will, etc., etc.
Okay.
So yeah, We Need New Names by Violet Bulawayo. This one you can find in bookshops here. It's good in the sense that it's beautifully written, but I just
not Uma's favorite.
I just wasn't blown away with the story.
Okay.
And I was just bored.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with bored.
All right.
Yeah.
Today we're looking at the shortlist, the Man Booker shortlist, and when we come back, we've got Ruth Ozeki's one.
Four more books. There's five, but like I said, The Lowland by Jhumpa Lahiri wasn't out. It only came out last week, and I haven't had a chance to get to it yet.
All right. And of course, this is Bookmark BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, and it's The Bigger Picture. I'm Jasmine Shamsuddin with Uma Pag and Ampike Pak, and we're sort of looking at five out of the six Man Booker Prize shortlist titles today, and Jim Crasey's Harvest is something that sort of set back in time, isn't it?
That's right. So,
and it's also, you know, it mimics the biblical story as
because
well.
Because it's set in 7 days.
Not all right.
So the story,
there's a little bit more to
it. Oh, yeah, there is. The story is set in 7 days, and I think that's the first big giveaway.
Someone gets expelled.
Yeah, but the idea is that essentially it's this morality tale, which is about... so there's a period in England's history where title holders to shared land, basically the commons, were forced off it and evicted, basically fenced it off and evicted the peasants. They forced the peasants off who actually farmed the land. And so this is the story that kind of takes place during that that period. It was kind of an enclosure movement. And the hero of this novel is called Walter Thirsk. And he's kind of like this stranger in this town. And he arrived as a stranger. And he recounts how basically there's one catastrophic harvest week. And basically different newcomers. So there's a vagrant family. There's a whole bunch of strong arm enforcers. And how they arrive and you know, kind of... try to move against the old collective virtues, if you will. It's a very... Jim Crace is a very interesting author in that he writes... His specifics are incredible. Like, when you're talking about a period piece and mm-hmm. Jim Crace goes down to, like, the props, the clothes they're wearing...
Right. What has he written before that we might know?
Oh, actually... Ooh, let me think... What's my favorite?
Sorry, Uma.
My favorite. I know it's just, I'm drawing a blank now.
Right.
My favorite of his books was actually about a bunch of people stuck in hell, and I'm trying to think what it is.
Oh.
I'm just gonna. It'll come back
okay,
to me in a second. But, yeah. So what's interesting about his thing is his specificity is incredible. So you know, I'm giving you the like, a rotting wood smells like. Bread and biscuits, and the piss and honey tang of apple trees. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got beautiful wordplay like that, and the writing is incredible. But I don't know if it's fun. And this is the other problem I had for Harvest, like Bulawayo's book, mm-hmm. was just a little tedious to read.
Okay, overall, do you find that this year's list had a lot of tedious books in it?
Three out of the five that okay. I've read are tedious.
Wow.
And I don't know what it is. I don't know if I'm just getting tired of this kind of literary fiction where mm-hmm. it seems so caught up in character. I mean, I know that's the premise of literary fiction that, you know, character is all important and all of that. But, you know, sometimes... You could do with a very good plot, right?
Yeah,
you want a bit
story.
Of a twist. It doesn't... Literary fiction shouldn't preclude plot. And that's what's annoying.
Missing?
Yeah. And so this book is kind of narrated in the present tense. So this is what I like about the book. When he's narrating something in the present tense, Jim Crace takes you back to that time. The lingo he uses, the language he uses, like I said, the way he describes events, it feels like you're there. I mean, so you got the perspective of a peasant farmer. He really takes you into the brain of that time, about the rise of the wool trade, and you know, this meteoric rise of the wool trade that actually forces landowners to convert their farms into sheep pastures and so on and so forth, right? So, yes, a beautiful capsule of a specific time and place. But man, can I say boring again?
Sure.
Because yeah, and this is the thing. It was a hard read, and I know a lot of people will say that, you know, hard reads are good reads as well. You know, you got to put in the
it
time
can
and
be,
effort.
Then it can be just boring, yeah.
And sometimes you just feel so tired at the end of it. And that's how I felt with Jim Crace and Harvest.
All right.
So Jim Crace and Harvest, and the third book, which I found tedious, but
we're getting through the boring ones first.
I'm getting through the boring ones first, and I'll get to my two favorites.
Sure.
Right. Okay. Yet again, can I just say tedious but good?
All right.
Okay. Is The Luminaries by Eleanor Catton. Now I loved her first book. She is a Kiwi. And her first book was called The Rehearsal, and it's like super meta, right? Her first book is like, it's a story within a story within a story, and it's a narrative about a group of teenage girls who are acting out the consequences of a sex scandal at their school.
Hmm.
And it's just, it's amazing. It was so tight, it was beautiful, it was complex, and it was, and it made you think, and character driven, but yet there was this plot element that was very, very strong. This one is her epic novel. I think it's about 900 pages long, love.
Oh my God.
Panjang Gila, right? And it's about the New Zealand gold rush.
Okay.
And 19th century narrative, you know, with yet again with the right sounding dialogue, and she really goes into the mind of people. This guy called Walter Moody, he's a would be prospector. He shows up 1866, I think. Hoikitika is the name of the town, I think, Hoikitika, and basically he meets a bunch of men in the local tavern hotel, and there's a prospector's body that's been found in a cottage, right? And and there's also a prostitute that has been found unconscious in the middle of the road, and there's like stories of larceny and intrigue. So there's a whole murder mystery story that's going on in the, all set in the kind of backdrop of this New Zealand gold rush of the 1860s, you know, and you know, there's a mistaken identity, shipwrecks, there are letters that don't go to the wrong people, and opium, legal struggles, all kinds of stuff that make for like a, you know, turn of the 19th century caper, right? But it's long,
right?
But it's very, very long.
Too long.
And I don't know what kind of a mood I was when I was reading this year's booker list, but yes, they all just left me going, why is this book so long?
Right.
Why are you so long? But yet again, I can't fault Eleanor Catton. She's a beautiful writer. And that first book, The Rehearsal, I mean, that's what kept me going through this one, because I keep thinking, I was hoping for this big twist and plot twist. And they come. They just take a long time to come. So yeah, Harvest the Luminaries and We Need New Names were all
the tedious ones.
Yeah, beautifully written yet incredibly tedious books.
Okay.
Which I can't say that I enjoyed.
Now, The Testament of Mary
This
has received a lot of wonderful
Has it? Okay,
reviews.
Good. Because this was awesome.
You like this one?
I love this book.
I'm glad
so this
to hear
is by Combe Tobin. Yeah. Oh, good. Combe Tobin. It's also the slimmest volume ever to be shortlisted for the Booker Prize.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's very small. Okay, you can see where I'm coming from now. Those are the books too long and too tedious. This one, small to the point, fantastic. and essentially, it's a novella based on a stage play called Testament, right? And only it's a kind of a quiet. It's not dramatic, and it tells the story of Mary, as in Mother of Jesus. And essentially, she's a woman mourning the death of her son, and she's called upon to give an account of his life to two unnamed kind of inquisitors. And she's angry, as the mother of a dead son would be, right? And she cannot even begin to say his name. Which is very cleverly written. She only refers to him as my son, the one who was there, the one you are interested in. She's living in Ephesus. It's after the crucifixion.
She's living in what?
Ephesus, the place. Yeah, yes. And it's after the crucifixion, and basically everyone close to Jesus was under surveillance and suspicion. And so, and she was like whisked away, I guess, by who was referred to as the beloved disciple, who we assume is John. And she tells her story, and she tells the story of her son, and she says, you know, she says she feels she doesn't like, as it's great, she doesn't like her son's followers, and she talks about how they were, and I quote, fools, twitchers, malcontents, and stammerers, and she doesn't like the fact that his boyhood identity was lost, and he became... and he became something else, and you know, he said his voice was all false and his tone all stifled, stilted. Sorry, not stifled. And yeah, it's a really fascinating look into the mind of not just Mary, Mother of Jesus, but the mother of a dead son, and how that person would react in the face of your son if he was brutally murdered in that way, being nailed to a cross, right? Because you know, crucifixion is probably one of the most horrible ways to go, right? And the book's climax kind of takes place with the crucifixion. She kind of describes that, and there's one great bit where she talks that the pain was his and not mine. And she says that that is the kind of truth that needed to be unburdened. The truth should be spoken at least once in the world. And she goes and she says, you know, essentially that she, and she says this at the book's end, I mean, again, not a spoiler, but she says it at the book's end that, you know, you have to confine dreams to the nighttime and living to the daytime, and you have to live in full recognition of the difference between the two. Beautifully written book. So small and precise, and every, it's so well thought out, and that's what I love about this book. And it doesn't have to be 900 pages to be a moving and truly wonderful work.
Wow.
This guy's,
do you think this one's
top two? I haven't read Jhumpa Lahiri yet.
Right.
But this one's
your favorite.
Top two.
Top two, okay.
Well, the second one's coming up.
The Spectator.
No, Ruth Ozeki. A Tale for the Time Being.
Right, yes, yes.
Yeah. So Ruth Ozeki's Tale for the Time Being, Japanese American author. Ruth Ozeki, and the opening line of this book is funny. It's got like the worst pun in the world. My name is Now, and I am a time being. Someone who lives in time, and that means you and me and every one of us who is or was or ever will be. It's kind of poetic, mm-hmm. even though it's a very, very bad pun. And essentially what she is she has a preoccupation with time, but essentially she has moved back to Japan from America because her father was sacked as a IT guy, as a computer programmer, and they were kind of shunned in the society, and they no longer feel at home, and they both contemplate, her father first, then her, contemplate killing themselves. And she kind of writes in this her diary of her last days on Earth, and then this diary kind of washes up on the shore of British Columbia, where it's discovered by an author by the name of Ruth, who I'm assuming is based on Ruth Ozeki. And the rest of the novel is kind of this adventure, discovery, meta-philosophical exploration into whether this girl a decade ago killed herself or died in the 2011 tsunami. And it's basically centered around, I don't know if this is the first kind of Western post-tsunami novel. I haven't read anyone else, but yeah, so this one is, so Ruth and her husband Oliver begin this search to find out the truth behind what happened to this girl.
Amazing.
Called Now. It is awesome. It's fantastic. It's got elements of time, it's got elements of it messes with, you know, being multicultural, between the for female persuasion, between death and memory, Second World War, the relationship between the reader and the writer, you know, what are you supposed to take? What is something, whether it's written for you, is it written for the author? Talks about depression, suicide, origami, everything. Everything's like in this book.
It's a pretty heavy book.
Yeah, it's a heavy book, moments. But this one's a good version. Good version of a heavy book. Not bad heavy.
Not boring.
Not bad, boring, heavy. No. A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki is definitely. So, if I had to pick a winner.
Right.
And this is hard.
The five that you've read, Jhumpa Lahiri's you haven't read.
I haven't yet read, and I'm going to read it, and then I think I'll have a chat about that. We'll have a chat about it when I read it. But I'd go for Combe Tobin.
Testament of Mary.
Yes. Yes. I would go for Combe Tobin.
Okay.
It's a really close fight between Combe Tobin and Ruth Ozeki.
Okay.
But I think I'll have to go for Combe Tobin.
All right. So when are the results coming out?
The results coming out next month, I believe. I'm not sure of the exact date, but we will announce it on the show when it does.
Yeah.
And we will have a discussion about how wrong they were or how right they were. I have to note, though, in the 4 years that we've been doing the show, I've been right 4 times out of 4. So
that's because you're brilliant, Uma.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes. I'll give you a little stipend later.
Yes. Thank you.
So here's 5 for 5. Fingers crossed. Combe Tobin, Testament of Mary. If I change my mind, I will let listeners know next
read
week.
Read that Jhumpa Lahiri book first and then come back to us.
I will.
All right. Uma Pagan, I'm PK Park, and I'm Jasmine Shamsuddin for Bookmark on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.